Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record program number 699, Miscellaneous Articles and Updates. This program is being recorded on December 27th of the year 2009. And before we launch into the main body of the broadcast, as always, and in particular with regard to programs in which there are updates, such as this one, it's absolutely essential for a significant understanding or a viable understanding of these broadcasts to use the www.spitfirelist.com website. Again, spitfirelist.com is the best single website for information about this type of material. About this subject, I should say. And at this point in time, I have my entire life's work up available for download for free on SpitfireList.com. That's 30 plus years worth of work. All available for download, all available for free. The only investment you need to make is one of time. And there's also a page to click on, by the way, to support the work that I'm doing. And if you don't like what you're seeing, there's no better way of supporting what I'm, better way of fighting back, I should say, than supporting the work that I'm doing. Now, that having been said, a classic example of something that will require the use of the SpitfireList.com website for a fundamental understanding of what I'm talking about, and that is the subject of the Oklahoma City bombing. I've not only done a lot of material about the Oklahoma City bombing, but in particular I've done numerous broadcasts with descriptions talking about the evidentiary tributaries running between not only the Oklahoma City bombing and other terrorist incidents, but also evidentiary tributaries running from the Oklahoma City bombing to what I call the Underground Reich, literally a Third Reich that went underground and has perpetuated itself in mafia-like fashion since the end of World War II, using the profound political and economic connections that the Third Reich had to transnational corporations and the international cartel system. And if that seems like a bit much for one sitting, I fully appreciate that. That's why the SpitfireList.com website is so important in this context. In particular, in For the Record 456, Nazi and Fascist Connections to September 11th, I go into many of the evidentiary tributaries connecting the Oklahoma City bombing to the first attack on the World Trade Center in 1993, to the September 11th, 2001 attacks, to the AMIA bombing in Argentina in 1994, and even evidentiary tributaries running back to the bombing of Pan Am 103 in 1988. And one of the main things to consider in connection with Oklahoma City is the fact that there is unimpeached testimony from Carol Howe, an undercover ATF informant, that maintained that Timothy McVeigh was in fact a protege of Andreas Strassmeyer, who was the security coordinator for a white supremacist compound in Oklahoma called Elohim City. Andreas Strassmeyer was not only a former German army officer with intelligence training, he also was the son of Gunter Strassmeyer, who was Helmut Kohl's chief of staff and the architect of German reunification. Andreas was present at the reunification ceremony, had a security clearance from the German government. His father, again, was Helmut Kohl's chief of staff. His grandfather was one of the charter members of the Nazi Party under Adolf Hitler. And among the many reasons for the, at this point, fairly obvious cover-up of the Oklahoma City bombing is the fact that had the truth come out, it not only would have laid bare the myth of the denazification of Germany, it would have laid bare the Underground Reich, and in particular with Andreas Strassmeyer having been alleged by Carol Howe to be not only the mastermind of the Oklahoma City bombing, but she alleged that Timothy McVeigh was no more than his protege, it would have set up Andreas Strassmeyer certainly for the death penalty if he had been brought in. By the way, there's a strong physical resemblance between Andreas Strassmeyer and John Doe number 2, the as yet unnamed additional suspect collaborating with Timothy McVeigh, according to many witnesses. McVeigh actually had a lot of collaborators, according to many witnesses, but you can use the internet and compare Andreas Strassmeyer to John Doe number 2. Europe does not have the death penalty, and with the son of Helmut Kohl's chief of staff facing the death penalty, it just wouldn't have looked good from a PR standpoint. Beyond that, it would have opened up an investigative vista, to coin a term, into what I call the Underground Reich, and a firm way of penetrating the post-war mythology of the United States and Germany as well. Yet another article indicating that the official record has been tampered with regard to the Oklahoma City bombing. This is an AP story by Tim Talley. Among the newspapers that carried this was the Providence Journal. This is from the Providence Journal of September 28th of 2009. It's datelined Oklahoma City. Headlined, "Security taping of Oklahoma bombing appears edited. Subheaded, tapes from four cameras are blank in the minutes leading up to the 1995 blast that claimed 168 lives," an attorney who has the recordings says. It reads in part, "Long secret security tapes showing the chaos immediately after the 1995 bombing of the Oklahoma City Federal Building are blank in the minutes before the blast and appear to have been edited," an attorney who obtained the recordings said Sunday. "The real story is what's missing," said Jesse Trentadue, a Salt Lake City attorney who obtained the recordings through Federal Freedom of Information Act as part of an unofficial inquiry he is conducting into the April 19, 1995 bombing that killed 168 people and injured hundreds more. Trentadue gave copies of the tapes to the Oklahoma newspaper, which posted them online, and provided copies to the Associated Press. The tapes turned over by the FBI came from security cameras various companies had mounted outside office buildings near the Alpha P. Mura Federal Building. They are blank at points before 9:02 a.m. when a truck bomb carrying a 4,000-pound fertilizer and fuel oil bomb detonated in front of the building," Trentadue said. "Four cameras in four different locations going blank at basically the same time on the morning of April 19, 1995. There ain't no such thing as a coincidence," unquote, Trentadue said. He said government officials claim the security cameras did not record the minutes before the bombing because, quote, they had run out of tape, unquote, or the tape was being replaced, unquote. "The interesting thing is they spring back on after 9:02, he said. "The absence of footage from these crucial time intervals is evidence that there is something there that the FBI doesn't want anybody to see," unquote. Well, there'd be quite a bit of information that they would not have wanted people to see. There was an evidentiary, one of the many evidentiary tributaries implicating somebody much larger than just McVeigh and Nichols, was an indication that a white supremacist group based in the East and the Midwest had conducted some armored car robberies and that they were part of the white supremacist milieu that orbited around and intersected with Elohim City. Again, both Timothy McVeigh and the aforementioned and Andrea Strassmeyer frequented Elohim City. Jesse Trentadue's brother had been mistaken, and we've covered this in past broadcasts, had been mistaken for a possible member of that group and appears to have been beaten to death in prison. The prison authorities alleged that he committed suicide. It is the viewpoint of the Trentadue family that he was in all probability beaten to death by officialdom or elements working for officialdom in order to extract a confession. Whatever the case, certainly it appears that Trentadue's brother was the victim of a homicide, that certainly the authorities, if they didn't actually do it, certainly bear executive responsibility for not containing whoever did do it. And it is one of the tributaries leading to a much wider group of conspirators than just Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols. Speaking, by the way, of Timothy McVeigh, one of his former associates, a fellow named Norm Olson, who garnered quite a bit of publicity in the mid-90s as an associate of the Michigan militia, has now turned up in, guess where? Alaska, and he is working in Alaska with the Alaskan Independence Party. That is a formerly secessionist and white supremacist slash fascist party that is looking to have Alaska declare its independence from the United States. Norm Olson is now up there working with the Alaskan Independence Party. An article about that appeared in the AP. This is from the Associated Press of 2000. Well, let's see. This is actually a relatively recent article, and it talks about the Associated Press. Basically, it talks about Norm Olson being up in Alaska by 2002. This is an AP story from 2002. He was working with the Alaskan Independence Party relatively early. He actually only moved to Alaska in 2005. But this article dates his collaboration with the AIP to 2002. The article is headlined, Michigan Militia Founder Moving to Alaska. And again, this predates his actual move, but documents his collaboration with the Alaskan Independence Party. It appears that Sarah Palin is essentially a cat's paw for that party. This article reads, the founder of a militia group in Michigan says he's planning to move to the Kanawha Peninsula after he was cast aside by the militia's main body as being too radical and self-serving. In the mid-1990s, Norman Olson lorded over the Michigan militia. The brash, camouflage-clad preacher and gun dealer railed at the government and trained his troops in the North Woods at the extreme northern tip of Michigan's Lower Peninsula. By decade's end, the militia had cast aside its founder, and now the 55-year-old Olson plans a move to Alaska. Quote, everybody understands what strategic retreat is all about, Olson said Monday. I would like to see a win in Michigan, but I'm not seeing it. Alaska is a state that offers some hope. Olson's 120-acre property, formerly a Michigan militia training ground, is for sale, and he plans to move his family and followers to Alaska's Kenai Peninsula after it's sold. I'm going to go up there and get involved in the Alaskan independence movement, he said. I may get involved in politics. I may run for governor, unquote. The Alaskan Independence Party is one of six parties that have spots on the Alaska ballot. And again, as we've spoken about in a number of broadcasts, including For the Record 652, Palin by comparison, Sarah Palin, the Republican vice presidential candidate in 2008, appears to be little more than a cat's paw for the AIP. The AIP is not only secessionist, but it is also a correspondent party of official white supremacist and Nazi organizations and parties in other parts of the United States. More about Norman Olson and the AIP. Lynn Van Huysen, H-U-I-Z-E-N, succeeded Olson as state commander of the Michigan Militia Corps Wolverines in 1996. Van Huysen blames Olson for, quote, for negative publicity the militia received in the wake of the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing. He was just too far out there, Van Huysen said. He wanted a revolution. Fortunately, most of us had more sense than that, unquote. Lloyd Meyer, an assistant United States attorney in Grand Rapids, who has successfully prosecuted militia-related cases in southwest Michigan, agreed, quote, he was a false prophet who led people astray thinking the United States of America was the enemy, unquote, Meyer said. Again, quoting, since 9/11, he didn't fit the times, unquote. Olson offered no apologies for his militia activities. Today's militia is too complacent, and Alaskans tend to share his suspicion of government and a staunch desire for self-determination, he said. Quote, in Michigan, I thought we could establish a beachhead, Olson said. I'm afraid that over the last 4 years, the fire's gone out in the bellies of the patriots. We no longer shake the guns in the faces of the bureaucrats and politicians, unquote. Olson hopes to start a church and coax members of his Michigan congregation to follow him and his family. He said he doesn't fear Alaska winters, which on the Kanawha Peninsula may actually be milder than the climate at his Michigan home. Quote, I'll take blinding blizzards as opposed to the jackbooted thugs marching up my driveway any day, he said. Well, again, note here that basically, as noted, by the way, by some of the former fellow Michigan militia members, Olson views the United States as the enemy. And one of the things that is, I think, important to understand is that with the end of the Cold War, the United States itself is now facing dismemberment and destruction. Basically, an application of rollback or liberation theory in which various ethnic and political groups will be the focal point of agitprop and will ultimately agitate for, and I suspect in the wake of a political and economic catastrophe such as a further financial collapse and or a terrorist incident with weapons of mass destruction, which will engender a global financial collapse, I would not be too surprised to see the United States go the way of the former Soviet Union, and that is the plan of not just the underground Reich, but some of the forces which they serve and which in turn serve them. Again, it may seem real silly to see Norm Olson of the Michigan militia up there agitating. But remember that the party that he on whose behalf he's agitating was the party on whose behalf Sarah Palin operates as well. So in evaluating Nazi, fascist, secessionist, and white supremacist elements, they are not to be seen as something apart from the mainstream Republican Party, which has gone about as far as one can go in terms of becoming extreme. Indeed, I wouldn't necessarily call it a rebuke, but a reminder to some listeners, when I first began talking about the breakup of the United States back in the middle of this decade and in conjunction with the programs I did about the Dalai Lama and the UNPO, I caught a fair amount of flack from people suggesting that such a thing was fantastic. It couldn't take place. I was seeing things in the usual litany of negative comments. Well, now, for example, and for the record, 676, we actually have a major page-long op-ed piece in the Wall Street Journal advocating the breakup of the United States. Indeed, Fox News and other right-wing outfits associated with the Republican Party in this country are being quite explicit about the possibility of secession from the United States. And believe me, not only the underground Reich, but some of the forces of darkness, for all of this country's shortcomings and faults, and they are numerous and enormous, with a capital N and a capital E. The fact of the matter is that what is coming, I've long seen America going fascist, but what is coming is way beyond that. What is coming is the dissolution of the United States, and beyond that, the end of the Enlightenment itself. We are going back to before the Enlightenment, and barring a sea change, and I'm afraid that's not going to happen, you're not only going to see the United States itself destroyed, and those of you who have entitlements ranging from Social Security to government/military pensions, you can kiss that one goodbye, because they ain't going to exist, and you aren't going to have them. But what is coming again is something so huge and so evil that it's difficult for the average citizen even to grasp, but not meant in any way to be patronizing. But note what happened to the former Soviet Union, because barring a sea change, I'm afraid the same thing is intended for the United States. There may be some things that the U.S. could do to avert such a catastrophe, but they had bloody well better start doing it. And for again, for those listeners who in the middle part of this decade found fault with me for suggesting that such a thing was not only possible but intended by certain elements, well, that may not seem so fantastic now. Returning now to the subject of the AIP, and again, for the record, 652 goes into that. There are other programs as well going into the Alaskan Independence Movement and its links with the UNPO. Guess who is doing the shepherding of Sarah Palin around in power circles in Washington, D.C.? The fellow who's doing it, according to an article by Christopher Hitchens that we're about to access, is a fellow named Fred Malek. He's not only a longtime GOP operative and a significant Carlyle Group operative, but Fred Malek was the Republican National Committee member and Nixon administration figure who successfully purged the Bureau of Labor Statistics of Jews because Nixon was convinced that the high unemployment figures he was seeing was the result of a Jewish conspiracy inside of the Bureau of Labor Statistics to try to undermine him. Fred Malek then undertook successfully to purge the BLS of Jewish analysts in order to please Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon himself, a longtime operative on behalf of the underground Reich, he was the chosen operative of Alan Dulles to oversee the Crusade for Freedom, in which entire SS intelligence units and Central and Eastern European fascists were brought into the United States, not just to work with our intelligence system, to become leaders of the Republican Party. And that evolved into and metamorphosed into a Nazi/fascist wing of the Republican Party. I would now suggest that the Republican Party as a whole now would qualify very effectively as a fascist political party. There's still a handful of real conservatives within the Republican Party, but they are, to say the least, an endangered species and can no longer effectively determine the fate of that party. Fred Malek again, purged Jews on behalf of Richard Nixon from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and Nixon was the fellow who oversaw the Crusade for Freedom, literally the importation of Third Reich alumni, their grafting into the Republican Party, where they remain a major element. They were turned into a permanent element of the Republican Party, whereas they had previously coalesced only in presidential election years. They did that in 1973 when George Herbert Walker Bush was the chairman of the Republican National Committee. The chief spokesperson for Nixon's Crusade for Freedom, actually it was Alan Dulles's, Nixon was his operative, was Ronald Reagan. The State Department official who handled the machinations to bring these people into the United States was William Casey. So just think about what you had in 1980. You had Ronald Reagan, the chief spokesperson for the Crusade for Freedom, with George Herbert Walker Bush, former CIA director, for whom CIA headquarters is named, and the fellow who made the Nazi Republican contingent permanent in 1973. Reagan then proceeded to appoint many former Nixon officials, ranging from Richard Allen, his first National Security Advisor, to Alexander Haig, Caspar Weinberger, George Shultz, all former Nixon operatives, all found their way very nicely into the Reagan administration. And the manager of the Reagan-Bush campaign in 1980 was none other than William Casey. And as I've spoken about so often, the person who basically staffed the Republican Party Reagan administration's appointees when he became president was Helena von Damm herself, a protege of Otto von Bolschwing, Adolf Eichmann's superior in the SS, in administering so-called Jewish matters for the Third Reich. So that is the heritage of Fred Malek, who purged the BLS of Jews under Richard Nixon, and it is none other than Fred Malek who was doing the shepherding of Sarah Palin around Washington, D.C. The following is from Slate, an online magazine of December 7th, 2009, article by Christopher Hitchens. It's titled Palin's Pals, subtitled Sarah Palin's Brand of Populism is Dangerous and Deceptive. And after talking about the marketing of Sarah Palin, Christopher Hitchens goes on to write, skipping down, the person who has been introducing Palin into the more exalted social and political circles of the Capitol and who has already arranged her appearance at the Alfalfa Club is Fred Malek. Two things about Malek are worth bearing in mind. The first is that he was an important member of the Nixon administration, a senior figure on the Republican National Committee, and the campaign manager for the re-election of George H.W. Bush in 1992. And by the way, as we have spoken about, those same Nazi elements were coalesced on behalf of the 1988 campaign of George Bush and in a more behind-the-scenes way for the 1992 campaign as well. And Malek was George H.W. Bush's, the manager of his 1992 campaign. The point being here that these mainstream so-called conservatives are actually not only fascists, but they're traitors, and their overall goal is the breakup of the United States. They will no doubt be handsomely paid by those whose dirty work they are so dutifully doing. More about Fred Malek. With his Carlyle Group and other corporate connections and his mansion in suburban McLean, Virginia, Malek is almost a prototypical establishment Washington insider and consigliere Republican against whom Palin's adoring book tour crowds in their pathetic dreams imagine her to be a crusader. But her preposterous book, Going Rogue, is larded with praise for the wise support and advice of this leathery old beltway bandit. Populism? Ha! Unless, that is, you count Jew-baiting as a form of populism, which I suppose in a way it is. William Jennings Bryan, that other foe of Darwin, was also a fan of the Klan. Because the second thing to note about Malek is that he was the man who drew up a list of Jews to be fired from the civil service under the Nixon administration. I am surprised that so many people have allowed themselves to forget this, and that Palin has never been asked a single question about it. In the early 1970s, Nixon, whose White House tapes show consistent evidence of anti-Semitic paranoia, gave orders that the Bureau of Labor Statistics be purged of what he called a Jewish cabal, unquote. The job of drawing up the list was given to Malek, whose information led to what was called the reassignment, unquote, of some officials within the Labor Department. So that is who is shepherding Sarah Palin around. And, again, I would not fail to note that she has some very powerful allies, and yet, if one looks away from the Beltway operatives such as Fred Malek, who are trafficking her around, you find at the other end of Sarah Palin's political connections, you find people like the AIP now working with people like Norman Olson and people who are quite overt about wanting to destroy the United States. One of the things that I've noted in connection with the AIP, in addition to its Nazi and fascist and white supremacist connections, I've also noted its links to the UNPO, which sounds like a wonderful organization, the Unrepresented Nations and Peoples Organization. Sounds delightful. Should have figured somewhere in Avatar, maybe, some people might think. Well, in fact, the UNPO, although it sounds just delightful, is actually, to all appearances, an underground Reich functionary. It is headed up by Karl von Habsburg, the heir to the the House of Habsburg, his father Otto von Habsburg, a member of the Free Rudolf Hess Society, and the UNPO basically is an organization that champions the rights of relatively small ethnic groups and would-be independent areas in large countries such as Russia, China, and the United States. And it seeks the independence of these peoples and areas as a way of breaking up those areas. One of the first, in fact, the UNPO explicitly counts its first success as the secession of Kosovo from Serbia. We've noted in past discussion of Kosovo and the Balkans wars that the Kosovo Liberation Army, in addition to its drug trafficking and overt Islamist connections, is descended from the fascist fighting forces in the Balkans of World War II, most significantly the 21st Waffen-SS or Skanderbeg Division. The fathers and grandfathers of many of the KLA members fought for Skanderbeg and other fascist fighting formations in the Balkans. I would note that the UNPO, in addition to actively allying itself with elements who are looking to break up the United States, more about that inside too, have aligned themselves, for example, with the Tibetans and the Uyghurs, Turkophone religious Muslims who are present in Xinjiang province in China, and who, along with the Tibetans, have been agitating for independence. The UNPO very much advocates independence of various groups within China, including the Mongolians and also the aforementioned Uyghurs and Tibetans. In this regard, and to the extent that there are elements of our State Department and intelligence services that collaborate with the UNPO, those elements are basically cutting what's left of this country's throat, because ultimately the groups who are looking to break up Russia and China, even in Russia beyond the point that the breakup of the former Soviet Union demarcated, those same elements are looking to break up the United States. There is a chapter in a book called Dollars for Terror that I've accessed many times in connection with the September 11th attacks. The book was authored by Richard Labeviere. It appears to be basically a cat's paw for French intelligence. There really is a real Richard Labeviere, but he appears to be what the intelligence services refer to as a designated writer. It's a self-explanatory term. And there's a chapter in Dollars for Terror entitled, Is There a Pilot on Board the U.S. Aircraft? Which not only a very interesting metaphor for September 11th, but which I think affords us a way of understanding what is taking place, because I fully appreciate that for a lot of people, they're wondering, what in hell is Dave talking about? The head of the Tibetan desk at the State Department is a woman named Paula Dobryansky. She is the daughter of Lev Dobryansky, one of the fascist Ukrainians who was involved with the Crusade for Freedom, the implementation of rollback or liberation theory, a Third Reich political warfare strategy adopted by the U.S. and successfully implemented to effect the breakup of the former Soviet Union. And what is left of the United States is being used as a vehicle for not only the further fracturing of Russia, but the fracturing of China, and ultimately the United States itself, barring a sea change, is going to be sacrificed on that very same altar. It is to be hoped that elements in this country across the political spectrum, ranging from liberal slash progressive, right on up through the authorities themselves, will take action to try to prevent this, It remains to be seen whether this actually happens. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record Program Number 699, Miscellaneous Articles and Updates. This program is being recorded on December 27th of the year 2009. My name's Dave Emery. Happy New Year.